It's time again for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective. The coaching perspective with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. Glad to be here in studio with you today and with our guest, David Lund. Well, I'm Doug Gefeller. I'm your host. I'm a Master Certified Coach by the International Coach Federation, and I've been coaching business owners, senior executives, and their teams for 20 years, helping them to clarify their objectives and reach their goals. If you'd like to know more about my coaching services, just go to the website, thecoachingperspective.com. Well, our topic for today is coaching your way to financial leadership with author and coach David Lund. David is an international hospitality financial leadership expert, a certified professional coach, an author of two books on financial leadership. He's held positions as a regional financial controller, corporate director, and hotel manager with an international brand for 30 years. He authored an award-winning workshop on hospitality financial leadership and coaches hospitality executives and delivers his financial leadership training throughout the world. David, welcome to The Coaching Perspective.
Thank you, Doug. It's great to be here.
Hey, it's great to have you here. You know, we often have people talk to us, especially coaches and marketing people, about what is your niche.
Yeah.
And you have truly identified your niche here.
Well, it's after spending 30 years working in a hotel, it was almost impossible not to end up with hotel in my niche.
Besides having a niche, I found out as we were waiting for the show to start here that you're a transplanted Canadian, too.
Yes, grew up in New Brunswick and lived in five different Canadian provinces with my hotel career. I moved a lot of times.
And now you're a local resident in Corona Del Mar?
Yeah. My wife and I moved to San Francisco 6 years ago, and I left my corporate role just over 3 years ago, and we moved here late last year, sold our house in San Francisco, and wanted to move where it was a little bit warmer.
Well, you've got that wish the last few weeks, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been great.
Well, look, it's great to have you here, and I want to just shout out and thank Lisa Reed for the Orange County Speakers Networking Group, which is where you and I met.
Yeah.
Always a great place to go hang out and meet exciting new people.
Yeah, absolutely. And Lisa's great for organizing that. What a great group.
Yeah, she does a wonderful job. Well, look, tell us a little bit about your experience prior to your current coaching model, your kind of hotel background.
Yeah, so I grew up in a little town in Atlantic Canada that had a summer resort, the Algonquin Hotel. And I like to tell people that I grew up in the shadow of the Algonquin Hotel. And as a kid, we would walk by the hotel every day on our way to school. And in those days, in the 60s and 70s, townies actually didn't get to work at the hotel in the summertime. The only townies got to work on the grounds crew and the golf course. All the waiters and all the front desk people, they all came from Montreal and Toronto and from the colleges up there. So I was one of the first townies that ever got a job at the hotel.
Was that deliberate that they segregated them out? Or?
Well, back in the day, I think the polish wasn't really there for the locals to serve the kind of clientele that would stay in this hotel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, at least that was the thought, but those things have all changed.
Sure.
Yeah, so from there, I ended up going to hotel school. And there was a hotel school that actually started in my hometown the year I graduated from high school. And the deal I had with my best friend is we were going to go spend the winter in California after grade 12. And most of my friends either went to university or went to Europe for a year. And he told me in August that he hadn't saved any money and he couldn't go. So my dad was a teacher at the college. And he came home in September and said, "Son, what are you still doing here?" And I told him what was going on with my friend. And he said, "Well, there's this new course at the college. I think it's bartending. Why don't you go check it out?" So I went the next day and checked it out. And it wasn't bartending. It was hotel management. And it was a two-year college program. And there was no tuition. It was $200 for your textbooks and your whites and your knives.
Oh,
and
nice.
I was in hotel school. Yeah.
Well, not as exciting for someone that age as maybe bartending, but
right.
Probably a better long-term.
Yeah.
So how'd that work?
It worked out really well, and I ended up being a bartender at the hotel during the off-season. There was one lounge in the hotel that I actually convinced them to open, and I ran it, and most of my college buddies were the best customers. And I did that for 2 winters and 2 summers I worked at the resort, and the last summer I worked in the receiving department, where I actually learned a lot about the food that comes into the hotel and the proper stocking and rotation of the shelves and all that stuff. And then at the end of my second summer, I transferred to another hotel in the same chain, all the way to Banff, Alberta. And from
I love
there,
Banff.
Yeah, from there, I could probably spend the whole hour talking about everywhere I transferred. But about 10 years later, I ended up getting a job at a hotel, and I was the assistant food and beverage controller. And my path at and that time was to become a food and beverage manager and then become a general manager. Well, I got a phone call from the general manager's secretary one day, and she said, the GM wants to see you. Come on up, which was very unusual.
Uh-oh, what did I do
yeah,
wrong?
Yeah, exactly. And the GM sat down with me, and he said, we've just hired your brother as the director of finance for the hotel, and we have a very strict nepotism policy, and you're going to need to transfer. We're transferring you to British Columbia, to the Empress Hotel. And I said, what? He goes, yes. I said, what am I going to be doing? He goes, well, actually, I don't know. And then he opens up his file and he looks and he says, you're going to be the assistant accountant. And I said, assistant accountant? I don't know anything about accounting. And he goes, I don't know. Just follow orders.
So did you have a little talk with your brother when you after you left that meeting?
I did. And actually, I was okay with it. My wife at the time really wasn't. But we ended up moving to Victoria. And I was a natural when it came to accounting. And I went to took some evening courses and did what we call a CMA in Canada, which is kind of the equivalent to an accountant's degree here. I didn't do all of it, but I became very... very talented at explaining the numbers to people and being able to work with them, because I had worked in operations for almost 10 years, and now all of a sudden I'm dealing with the numbers, and most people who deal with the numbers and only the numbers don't have those skills.
Right.
Yeah. So fast forward another 10 years, and I'm now back at that same hotel that I was at in Toronto, and I'm now the controller of the hotel. But things aren't going so well. And as the controller of a business, especially a large business like that, $100 million plus business, 1,300 rooms, over 1,000 employees, the biggest job the financial leader has is to gather the financial information and be able to put together good forecasts, good budgets, good commentaries, great month-end closes with financial statements that make sense. But I wasn't really getting much of that done in this new hotel that I was looking after. I had an impossible job of trying to get the managers and leaders in those other departments to give me the information I needed so I could do that part of the job. It was like pulling teeth. I was chasing them all the time. And quite frankly, when they would give me information, it was either wrong or not prepared properly. It was very frustrating. A new general manager arrived on the scene, and he sat down with me and he said, David, what's going on? So I explained to him what my challenge was. And he said, I have an idea. He said, why don't you create a workshop? We'll call it Hotel Finances for Dummies. And I looked at him and I said, Ian, I don't have time to do that. Look at my desk. I'm here 10, 11, 12 hours a day already. And besides that, I'm not a teacher. I'm an accountant. And he said to me, no, it's the right thing to do. And he even made it part of my bonus criteria that year. No course, no workshop, no bonus.
We just guaranteed there's going to be a workshop.
Yeah, so I somewhat begrudgingly put it together, and the day of the workshop approached, and I was pretty sure that it was going to suck, and I was going to suck. But to my complete amazement, at the end of the day, I had a lineup of leaders wanting to thank me for teaching them what all this financial stuff was about.
A star is born.
Yeah, and it really... I learned 4 really important things that day. The first thing I learned was that the leaders prior to this, they didn't know what I did with the information. And as soon as they saw that their information went to the owners and went to corporate, they saw that they had impact, and they immediately got in the game. The second thing it showed the leaders was this information and how to put it together really wasn't that difficult, especially when they got into a room with 40 other leaders and they all discussed how it was challenging in their area. Kind of those challenges kind of melted away because everybody could see that everybody was kind of in the same boat and it really wasn't that difficult. And then the third thing, which was really amazing, was that overnight, the return on investment for the time I put into this workshop was amazing, because now I had leaders and managers that were giving me their stuff and were coming to me with cost-saving ideas and with revenue enhancement ideas, because they now saw that they had some impact. And then the fourth thing was, I realized, which is probably the most important thing for me, was that for the last 10 years, I've been doing this whole thing completely backwards. It wasn't until I served them and showed them something that they were willing to help me. And I thought, just because I was the director of finance, the controller of the hotel, that they needed to do this, but really they didn't need to do it. And I learned something really important, and I call it my version of servant leadership. But if you want someone to help you in an organization, you need to help them first.
You know, it's always amazed me. I have a financial background, too, which I don't want to use anymore. I don't want to spend all day doing it. Everybody in operations is absolutely aware that the finance accounting department is there to serve them. Nobody in the accounting finance departments are aware that they're there to serve the operations people.
Yeah.
It is the most obvious disconnect, and I see it all the time.
Yeah, and that's really what my coaching work is with financial leaders, is to show them what their real potential is. Because most financial people got into that arena to be leaders and to be business, to have impact inside of their business. But a lot of them find themselves very frustrated because they were just like me, not producing good information and not being that resource inside that business that people want to come and see. Because it's all very negative, but we can turn that all around really quickly. And that's what my coaching is to help the controller, the director of finance inside that business see what their real potential is. And if they just change their approach, and if they put that person first, and if they make agreements rather than creating expectations, and if they have a system to follow, which I've developed a system for them to follow, they can very quickly create a lot of traction and create a lot of financial leadership inside of their business. And that's good business.
Great. Well, we're going to get into that more. But so you've kind of brought us up to date. Now, you leave the hotel business and you start your own business.
Yes.
Take us through that.
Yeah, so...
What made you do that crazy thing?
Yeah, exactly. Well, about 4 years ago, I turned 50. And my wife and I were living in San Francisco. We were living in the Haight. And I would ride my bike to work up Nob Hill, 40 blocks every day, rain or shine. And one day, shortly after I turned 50, I was climbing Nob Hill one morning, and I had to pull over. I couldn't breathe. I thought I was having a heart attack or a stroke, or it turned out to be a panic attack. But what the thought I had stuck in my head was, I'm 50, and I've got more days behind me than ahead of me on this planet, and what am I doing with my life? And it came right out of nowhere, because I had a great job. My wife's business was doing really well. I've got three children in their 20s. They're all going to school and got jobs. Everything's working well. So I'm like, this, I don't know where this question came from. And I kind of concluded a couple of days later that I could probably do whatever I want, but I don't know what I want to do. And I kind of left it at that.
Isn't that so funny?
And I got busy again and got, like you do in a job. And then 2 or 3 months later, it's a Sunday, a foggy Sunday morning in San Francisco, and Joanne's in New York with a client for the weekend, and I'm walking our dog. And my dog meets another dog, which happens a lot.
Yeah.
And attached to this dog is this woman. So I asked the woman what her dog's name is, what her name is, and what do you do? And she said, my dog's name is Disco, my name is Melissa, and I'm a coach. And I said, coach, like, what do you coach? Volleyball, basketball? And she goes, no, I coach people. I'm a life coach. And I said, life coach? What's that? And I honestly didn't know. I mean, I'd heard of Tony Robbins, but I didn't know that people, ordinary people, had coaches.
Now, careful there. Coaches are not ordinary people.
This is true. Anyways, I had a most amazing talk with her. I talked for over an hour. And she asked me all kinds of questions. I think she was probably coaching me. I didn't even realize it at the time. But the question that really blew me away was the one that I asked her at the end of our conversation. I said to her, I said, do you think someone like me could do what you do? And she looked at me and she said, David, I used to be a hairdresser. What do you think? And I just felt a chill go completely through my body. It just blew me away. So I went home and I Googled her and I found her website. I sent her an email, said thanks. And again, back to work, busy, busy, forget about these things. And I never left the conversation going, I want to be a coach. Not at all. Fast forward another 3-4 months later, and my wife and I had just returned from 17 days in Italy. And I go back to work on Monday.
Oh, that's got to be hard to go back after 17
trip
days
of a
Italy.
Lifetime.
Yeah.
And I go back to work on Monday morning, and it's Monday, April 1st, April Fool's Day. And my phone rings at about 10 a.m., and it's the human resources director, and she's just down the hall, and we're friends. And she said, come down to my office, bring some coffee and your iPad. I want to see those pictures from your trip. And I thought nothing of it. I was no stranger to her office. And I'm in her office about 20 minutes, and she says to me, David, you don't know why you're here, do you? And I said, no.
Not what you want to hear out of HR.
But I kind of knew what was, you know, just the tone of her voice. And she said, well, I got bad news for you. While you were away, your boss had a meeting with the new owners, and they don't like you. They want their own controller. California is a right-to-work state, and we want you to quit. And I just said, are you kidding me? Is this April Fool's Day? Like, what's going on? And she goes, no, I wish I was kidding you, but it's not. So one thing led to another, and I'm not really at liberty to explain exactly what happened, but 30 days later, I walked out the door, and I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to take my passion for this financial leadership and these workshops, and I wanted to get some training and become a professional coach, put the two together, and create a business.
What a great story, David. What a great story. You know, the only person I feel sorry for in that story is the poor dog that had to sit there for an hour while you talked. My dog hates it when I stop and have these long conversations.
Yeah. Well, she made pretty good use of her time with the other dog.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, look, that kind of brings us up to date on your background. I want to ask you one question before we take a commercial break, and we've asked all of our guests this. What's your guiding principle? What keeps you true?
My guiding principle is that when I created that workshop, I really discovered my purpose. And my purpose is to transform the way an industry leads its people financially. And the way it's being done isn't the most effective, nor the most friendly. And I really see the way that I can impact people's lives, and the comments and the feedback I get from the people that I lead these workshops with and coach, that is the very definition of my purpose.
Great. Okay, well, look, hold on. We're going to take a quick commercial break here, and then we'll come right back and talk about financial leadership.
All right.
Do you have a desire to be a part of a conscious community? I mean a community of people who get together with the purpose of strengthening their awareness muscles, deepening their relationships, and striving for the extraordinary? Check out how to get started at productivelearning.com. We are a unique self-development company, and we believe that we all have the innate ability to create and live the lives we truly want. But we also know that ability needs to be nurtured and developed. That's why we offer over 40 different workshops to our conscious community. Workshops that intentionally stretch you beyond your comfort zone towards what you truly want. Our workshops are not ordinary. We take journeys across the world from exotic scuba diving trips to rich cultural getaways. And we offer amazing workshops right here in South Orange County. Join us and find out just how extraordinary life can be. Go to productivelearning.com today or call Lisa Reed at 949-234-0628. To see how you can be a part of our conscious community, that's productivelearning.com or 949-234-0628.
And now back to Doug and his guest.
And we're back. Great to hear Lisa Reed's voice and Productive Learning there. Check it out. Well, look, we're here talking in the studio today with David Lunn, the hotel coach. Although you've changed that. What is it now?
I've kind of ratcheted down on the niche, and it's now the hotel financial coach.
Boy, I'll tell you, I thought the hotel coach was really getting down there. Now it's the hotel
financial coach.
Financial coach. Great. Well, look, fascinating background you've given us. But, you know, the essence of what you're talking about here is financial leadership. Tell us a little bit about what you mean there.
Well, in the hotel business, there are really three equally important pillars. The first pillar is the guest. Look after the guests. Great guest service. Hotel companies spend a lot of money, and hotel owners spend a lot of money creating great guest service, which makes good business sense.
Sure.
The second pillar is the colleague and creating great colleague engagement and creating great experiences for those colleagues so that they deliver great guest service. And a lot of money is spent to train those colleagues and to give them the kind of support and things like seasonal parties and newsletters and employee opinion surveys, you name it. Brands and owners spend a lot of money on colleague engagement. Well, the third pillar is the money, or the owner, or the P&L. They're all the same thing.
Okay.
And when you look inside what happens in a hotel and how we invest in that third pillar, it's completely different than the other two pillars because we don't invest. We come from a background in the hotel business where not that long ago it was an owner-operated business. So you would see the name on the marquee. It would say Hilton, and Hilton actually owned that hotel. Well, today it's not that way at all. Today there's brands, and then there's owners. And 99% of the hotels in the world, the brand and the owner are not the same. So brands still operate in the sense that look after the guests, and the money will look after itself. And that's always been the, kind of the motto. But now we find ourselves in a very different world. Owners expect brands to have financially engaged teams. Brands don't know how to create this financial leadership inside of their businesses. And that's the need that I fulfill.
So the brand focus is all about the customer pillar.
Definitely. And the colleague pillar.
Okay.
And they do obviously know and realize that the financial piece is critical, but they don't invest in it the same way they do in with the guest or with the colleague. And the real irony here is that brands mandate to owners what programs the owner is going to pay for. And that's all part of the management agreement. So the brand will say, we're going to have the following guest service programs in the hotel, and the owner pays. And the brand says to the owner, we're going to have the following employee engagement programs and trainings in the hotel, and the owner pays. So if the brand mandated a really great financial leadership training program, the owner would pay. And guess who benefits when we have great financial leadership in the hotel? Both the brand, because they're building great bench strength with their colleagues and leaders, and the owner benefits too because his bottom line is enhanced.
Let me push you a little on this financial leadership thing, because, you know, most people are going to say, well, financial leadership, I mean, is that just the person in charge of the accountants? The accountants just keep track of what the rest of us do.
Yeah, and that's really the point that's been missed, is that most hotels or in most businesses, they expect the finance department to look after all of this. Well, that's not the way it works. And if you're running a business of any size, it's very complex. There are a lot of people. There are a lot of departments. And there's one financial leader for that business usually, and there's a department. But their job is to keep the books, keep the assets, and keep the liabilities all straight. The forward-looking leadership piece is what's missing. And when we can get the leaders in the other non-financial departments to see that they can play a greater role and that it's not that difficult, the business gets an amazing lift. And people have a lot more fun, too.
So the accounting group, financial accounting group, is really taking care of the historical recordation of what happened. And what you're talking about, or what I hear you saying, is that the operations people need to take a financial interest and a leadership role.
Absolutely. And that's really when a business takes off, is when everybody's playing the same instrument the same way. And it's exactly the same when we look at guest service. We wouldn't let any department manager away from the responsibility of looking after the guests. The same with colleague engagement. We can't have a leader of a department who's not working well with their colleagues. So why would we let leaders of departments perform poorly financially?
So you're your training, and we're going to talk about what you do, your training is for the operations people to develop more financial awareness, or is it for the accounting people to become financial leaders?
It's both. So it's a two-prong approach, because really the leaders in the non-financial departments, they want this financial training, because they realize very quickly that it's not so difficult, and if they want to grow their career, if they want to become an executive, a department head, or a general manager, they need financial leadership training. They need to be able to talk about the P&L. They need to be able to talk about the business. Because when they sit down with the owner every month, that's all the owner wants to talk about. He doesn't want to talk about the guests or the colleagues. He wants to talk about the money. So these leaders are actually, I use the word dying to get this information, but pretty close. And as soon as they see that there's someone there to provide it for them, they step up.
Okay, so how do you go about what is it you do that creates this more financial awareness, this financial leadership?
Yeah, so I've designed two completely unique workshops. And the first workshop is the same workshop I created basically 10 years ago in that hotel. And it's really designed to show the leaders how the P&L works, what all the information is used for, and for them to really get a good understanding that this is not something to be scared of, and that it's something that they can actually figure out, learn to talk about very easily. So it's a one-day workshop where we basically tear apart the P&L, and everybody gets to talk about their area. What does this mean? How does that work? What's occupancy? What's RevPAR? What's average rate? Which one of them is the most meaningful measure? What are the other key business indicators? How do we make money in food and beverage? What's the sales mix of the hotel? What's the market segmentation? What's flow through? What are all the different acronyms and everything that we use inside of our business? And they leave the day going, I know so much more about what's going on inside my hotel. And they feel good about it. And I couple that with coaching for the financial leader to help him or her continue this momentum on afterwards. And there's a couple of key things that we create. One is we create what I call the monthly financial circle. And it's a simple path that we follow where everyone knows what's going to happen next. So basically we start with a forecast, and the forecast is everyone in the department who consumes resources or does schedules, they're the ones that put together the first part of the forecast. It then gets consolidated by the financial leader or the accounting department. And then if there are changes, which almost always need to be made, those aren't made at the 11th hour by the controller in a dark room. They're actually given back to those financial managers, and agreements are made on what needs to happen inside the P&L to get the forecast to where we need to be. And then the forecast is consolidated, it's locked, and then those leaders are encouraged to track their numbers throughout the month, so that if revenues aren't coming in, they can make adjustments to their purchase orders, they can make adjustments to their schedules. And there's a lot of things that those leaders can do in the month to make sure that the financial goals of the hotel are being met. And if they're not tracking this, nobody's looking at it. And then the third thing we do is, at the end of the month, those same leaders get the GL printout, and they get the financial statement for their area, and they make sure that the books are right before they're closed. They make sure there's no invoices missing. They make sure that the revenues are all there, which in a big, complex business, again, if you don't have people on the ground looking at those things, there's no way the finance department can make sure it's all right. It just doesn't work that way. And then the next part, which is the last part, is they get to write their commentary on their little particular area, and then the commentary gets consolidated. And inside of a hotel, the executive commentary is a very important document, because it tells everything about what happened in the month and the forecast for the upcoming months. And then the commentary really has some meat, and then we start all over again at the beginning of the circle.
Okay, so you've talked, David, about part of what you do is training. Part of what you're doing is, I'm going to say, consulting, in that your experience of what information should be gathered and so forth. Tell us more about the coaching element of what you're doing.
Yeah, so the coaching element is really interesting in that I'll sit down with a financial leader and I'll ask him how things are going inside of his business or her business, and how the communication process is working, and how they feel about their role and how productive they're being as the financial leader. And inevitably, it always comes down to the same thing. they really don't feel like they're having the kind of impact they want because they're frustrated because people don't give them the information they need. So I coach them around why that's happening. And what they see very quickly and very clearly is their leadership is not where it needs to be. And again, I'll call it servant leadership, but that's what I teach them, is that if you want someone to help you, you need to help them first. And one of the things we do, which is a very kind of a tactical thing, but I teach these leaders how to drop their expectations and to make agreements with the non-financial leaders inside of their business. Because at the end of the day, let's face it, people don't have to do anything. We expect them to do something. And quite often when we have expectations, people push back. So it's not an effective way. And I know because for almost 20 years, that's how I operated. So once they get this new understanding about what their real potential is and the impact that they can have by changing their leadership style, and you couple that with the workshops where we actually show the leaders how they can improve their lives and how they can improve their role inside the hotel, you put those two things together, it's very powerful.
I'm glad you went through that level of detail there, because so many times coaches think that coaching is a standalone thing. If I'm going to have you as a client, I'm going to only coach you. I'm not going to give you any training, any mentoring, any consulting. I'm strictly your coach, and the rest is separate, and I don't do that.
Yeah.
But that's not what I'm hearing you say.
Well, it's funny you say that, because in coaching school, that's exactly what they taught me too, was that, you know, don't ever tell your client what to do, which is actually not true. Lots of times they need our direction. They need to know when they're being coached, but they also need to know when someone has a much better approach to something, that they need to give it a try. And lots of times I'll find my clients will say to me, well, I'm not sure that that's going to work. And I'll say, listen, you don't need to trust that it's going to work. Just give it a try. And quite often, that's what makes the difference, because in people's minds, they need to know that it's going to work. But actually, you don't need to know that it's going to work. Just give it a try.
Yeah, I think that I'm glad you made that point, because I think it is important in the relationship with the client to understand and to have certain boundaries so that you as the client know, and I know when I'm coaching, and we both are aware of when I step out of the coaching role and I'm now consulting or training or teaching or mentoring or any of the other things that I may be able to bring to the engagement.
Yeah.
Separate from my coaching.
Yeah. And my clients all know that what our goal is, and that our goal is to help them with their financial leadership, to be a better leader and to have stronger relationships with the managers that they have inside of their hotels. And that gets really crystallized when we start talking about how they're feeling about how that's working. So that's really where the coaching comes in. And then we can basically tear it apart. And I have very specific lessons that I want to teach them on how to do things differently.
Okay. One of the things that you mentioned to me before we went on air, which really kind of blew me away, was that you have a guaranteed return.
Yeah, a guaranteed return on investment. So basically, if you're an owner of a hotel or the general manager or director of finance and you hire me for my premier program, which I call the Presidential Suite.
Of course.
Because it comes with everything. I'll make you a guarantee that I'll give you 100% of the feedback if you don't recover or save or generate what it costs to hire me. And I know I can do that because actually a client of mine taught me this. I was doing a workshop in Vancouver a couple of years ago, and at the end of the workshop, the general manager got up and he thanked me and he thanked all of the attendees, and there were over 40 people in the room. And he asked a really kind of unusual question. He said, I'd like all of you to make an agreement with me today. Are you willing to do that? Every single hand went up. I think this guy had been practicing his agreements with his team before, but he said, I would like each one of you to find $300 this month inside your budget, inside your department. Can each one of you find $300 in savings or increased revenues this month? Every single hand went up. So there's 42 people in the room. You do the math on that. That's $12,600. That's a lot more than my fee for one day. And then he said, can each one of you make an agreement with me that every month this year you'll find another $300? Every single hand went up. So you do the math on that, and that's almost $200,000 in bottom line savings. And as far as the cap rate goes and the value of those savings and the impact on the business, we just added $2 million in asset value. So that's my ROI guarantee. I teach the director of finance how to keep track of these savings, and we make agreements with the leaders that they'll find their $200 or their $300, whatever number we decide on. And all the financial leader has to do is continue this each month and work with his people, and they'll be able to prove that there's actual savings.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
It's magic, actually.
You know, there's only a few coaches that I have read about, actually haven't met any, that offer that kind of a guarantee. And they are in the stratosphere in terms of coaching engagement fees.
Right.
To the point where their fees are so high that if somebody's going to hire them, they obviously are going to follow through and take the advice, because I couldn't afford to pay that amount of money and ignore it.
Yes, and that's kind of where I'm coming from. And if you follow, my guarantee is if you follow my system, you'll get the results. That's it. It has to work.
Okay, great. You've written some books. Tell us
yes.
a little bit.
Well, I've written one book on financial leadership, which is, I call it The 7 Secrets to Growing Your Hotel Profits. And it's really about the philosophies that I've developed around financial leadership and how the third pillar really needs to be supported differently. And if it is, then a hotel can turn on the profits and ignite the leadership within their hotel to really make it much more impactful and much more profitable. Because in a hotel, there's really, quite literally, a million ways to waste money. But there's also a million ways to save money. And if you have the eyeballs of each one of your leaders and department managers looking to save money and looking for ways to increase revenues, you'll find it. But if you're not doing it, you won't.
So one of the things that you're doing, I mean, it's so fascinating. You have defined this very tight niche, but yet everything I hear you say or talk about here has such broad application outside your niche. I don't think it's niched knowledge.
Right.
It may be niched clients that you're looking for.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in the hotel business, and I love the hotel business, and I love the people that work in those hotels, and I know how hard they work. And I really, you know, my purpose is to serve them and to help them transform their businesses so that people have more fun. But you're absolutely right. I was talking to a gentleman a couple of months ago, and he runs a department in a university, and I was explaining to him what I do, and he said to me, dude, we have exactly the same problem. The left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing, and I don't know what finance wants. These guys speak in a different language, and my budget's a mess, and I really could use someone's help like yours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, what I'm hearing you saying is that you are giving them some tools, training, guides. You're also coaching them, and your coaching is part of your coaching is to get agreement, to get clear expectations, to get buy-in from everybody
yes.
as to what the end goals are. All of those things are just, you know, universally applied in almost any business.
Yes.
You talk about one thing I want to get clear here. You talk about the difference between how to and want to.
Mm.
Tell me a little more about that.
Well, in the hotel business, the how-to is how do I get all the department managers, how do I get them to give me good, accurate information about the forecast as it relates to the payroll they're going to use this month and the expenses that they're going to incur. That's the how-to. The want-to is why would they want to do this? So for me, I have to create, if I want to be successful with them, I've got to operate in the area of the want to. If I can increase the want to, the how to is everywhere, because it's really not very complicated. And I'll give you an example. Last year, we were still living in San Francisco, and my daughter, Allison, moved from Toronto down to San Francisco to find a job, finished university. And we were having a really hard time getting her to keep her room clean. And it would never occur to me to send her on a course or buy her a book on how to clean a room. She knows how to clean her room. So what's missing? What's missing is she doesn't want to clean her room. So if I'm going to have any impact with her, it's in the area of the want to. And inside my business, if I'm going to have any impact with those managers and getting them to perform better financially, I have to find the want to.
You know, we see this so clearly in the area of sales. I've talked to so many people in business that go, I don't do sales calls. I don't represent my company and do any sales because I don't know how to. The real issue is they really don't want to.
Absolutely.
You know, because they don't see what's in it for them.
Yes. Yeah. And anything in life, like just Google how to do something today and you'll get tons of answers, right?
Yeah.
And all of it quite good. Or most
Some
of it quite good.
8-year old kid will tell me how to do it.
Yeah.
Yes.
So whenever someone says they don't know how to do something, like you just said, what's missing is you don't want to do it. And turning on the want to in this situation is much easier than you might think. So why would someone want to provide good financial information inside of a hotel? Well, the reason they would want to is because if they can figure this out, they can get a promotion. They can make more money. They'll have a better, they'll have more fun at work. They'll be more marketable. It's really simple.
The accounting department will get off my back. My life will be easier.
I'll like this.
Yeah. I won't have as many questions to answer when that P&L comes out.
Yes, absolutely. Freedom.
And I'll know the answers to the ones they ask.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, look, we still have a little more time, but there's so much we could talk about here today.
Mm-hmm.
I want to sort of give the direction back to you. What else would you like to be sure we cover here today with our listeners?
Well, I think the whole idea around financial leadership is really empowering people to have fuller, richer, more on-purpose life at work. And a lot of people suffer at work because they think that their superiors are looking down on them at the monthly meeting or the weekly meeting when they get asked a question. So what's going on in your department? Why is your payroll too high or too low? And that creates an enormous amount of stress for people.
You become defensive immediately.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And people hate that part of their job. And I know people that have left my industry for that very reason, because they're sick and tired of being put upon. And I want to change that. And I want people to know that they can do this work, that it's not so difficult, that there is a system to follow, there is ways to improve this. And you know, when I did my first workshop and I had a lineup of people to thank me, it really showed me what's possible if you help another person that they are so appreciative. And that, to me, makes all the difference.
Do you end up spending much of your time searching for this reason, coaching them to identify why they should want to?
You know, with the financial leaders, it's readily apparent that they're frustrated that they're not having a bigger impact. And with the non-financial leaders, they're frustrated because they're being chased all the time to provide this information. Or in some hotels, they don't even bother to try. So the forecast is put together in a dark room and there's not a lot of intelligence that goes into it. And that business is really missing an incredibly important part of how it could function better if those department managers actually knew what their budget was and what their forecast was and how much resources they had to spend. How much more profitable could it be if actually people knew what was going on?
You know, it scares me to death when I sit in on meetings and I'm looking at the budget or the forecast that's been put together by the accounting department. And the operating people are listening like they've never heard any of this before. They didn't have anything to do with it. Where'd these numbers come from?
There's no buy-in. Zero. And you can very readily replace that with a great deal of buy-in and a great deal of commitment by people. Once they know they're part of the team and once they know they're part of the solution, they like it. People like to be close to the boiler room. They want to know what's going on. And it wasn't that long ago in our industry where getting the financial information was actually taboo. You weren't supposed to know.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Now we find ourselves in a completely different world, and people haven't really figured out yet how to educate and how to address it. So that's really what I'm about, is to help them.
To some extent, the sharing of financial information with people who don't understand the information is truly dangerous. It is like handing a loaded gun to someone that doesn't understand how guns work.
Yes.
It isn't the gun that's dangerous. It isn't the financial information that's dangerous. It's that you've missed or you've avoided the training step.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's what you're all about.
Yeah, and once people realize that someone cares enough to give them that training and show them, they step up.
Okay. One last question before I ask you to sort of recap for us. Flying by the seat of your pants, one of the chapters in your book. What are you talking about there?
Well, in a hotel, typically, at least in the last few years, business has been very good. And what I mean by flying by the seat of the pants is that revenues are growing every year and profits are good. And what's in the middle, we really don't know. We don't know what's in the middle of our statement. So we're flying by the seat of our pants. And what happens is the next time there's an economic downturn or some kind of geopolitical catastrophe, and all of a sudden those planes stop flying for 48 hours, nobody knows how to react. And that's where we're flying by the seat of our pants. We don't know what we're doing. So a good hotel will exercise the middle of the statement all the time, and they'll have a team of people that know what's in every single area of their hotel, and they're not flying by the seat of their pants. But unfortunately, most hotels are.
Well, look, before we wrap up here, how do people get in touch with you? And anything else that you want to just tag on that we haven't gotten into?
Yeah, thanks, Doug. The best way to get a hold of me is to go to my website, hotelfinancialcoach.com. And there's no "the" in front of that. It's hotelfinancialcoach.com. And I have a contact page there. Drop me a line. I'd be happy to send you a copy of my book. And all you need to do is give me your email address, and we can get going. And if you want to have a conversation about how we can create more financial leadership inside of your business, whether it's a hotel or, as you mentioned, another like-type business, I'd be more than happy to discuss that with people.
Great. Well, look, David, thank you very much for joining us today. This has been fascinating. I mean, my concern initially was how many people are interested in a topic just talking about hotels, but you have certainly presented material that can be used in every coaching situation, in every business situation, and I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Doug. I really appreciate you having me on the show, and lots of great questions. Thank you.
Well, great. Thanks for being here, and welcome to the Coaching Perspective radio community. Well, look, if you're out there listening to our podcast, then thanks for visiting our website, thecoachingperspective.com. Be sure to check out our archives for other shows with some other great guests. Speaking of guests, if you'd like to be on the show, we're always looking for interesting people, CEOs, coaches, HR professionals, authors. Hey, if you're interesting, I want to talk to you. Keeps me awake and excited. Just send me an email, doug@thecoachingperspective.com. Well, I hope you enjoyed the show today, that the discussion has provided you with new ideas and information that you can put to use immediately to identify and achieve your goals. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, The Coaching Perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach Doug DeFeller.